Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network for this Tuesday, October the 29th. We thank you for listening to AFR, and joining me to co-host the program today, if I guess quad host would be the better terminology, if that's a word. If it isn't, we just made
it. It's not. We just made it.
Ed Vitagliano, good morning, Ed.
One of the quad hosts. I like it.
Well, they got the squad in D.C.,
yeah.
Right? So we're the quad right here. Deal with that.
That's right. Huh? As you always say, how do you like them apples?
Walker Wildman is quad member number 3. How you doing, Walker?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
How are those twins holding up over there at night?
7 months old. Oh, they're doing pretty good. And 7 months old. And Andrew's.
You're kind of stuttering and stammering right here, Walker.
Andrew's.
I don't think you're getting as much sleep as you'd say you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I'm having to gather my thoughts. What do I want to say about my children?
You have 7 month twins.
Andrew's the smaller one
right.
of the twins. He weighs 3 pounds less than his brother, but he is about to be climbing out of his bed at 7 months old.
No kidding.
Yeah,
you,
we're going to have to lower it this week. Yeah, he's like pulling up. On his bed, he's 7 months old, so he's a strong one, even though he's smaller.
Okay, well, what about Samuel?
Samuel's a little chunky.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, he can't pull himself out.
No, he can't crawl yet because his belly won't let him. he just lays on his belly. He's like the Michelin man.
So. That's funny. Have you talked to him about this?
Yeah,
he's going to have to get more active.
He's sensitive, so I try not to talk about it.
He eats while he sees his little brother running around, you know. Andrew's going, you got to get fit with me, bro.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I like eating, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sleeping. Fred, good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I was just thinking, you know, we podcast this program.
Yeah.
And what Walker just said about his twins.
Yeah.
It will live.
At 8 years of age, they're going to come back and see what daddy said.
He's about right.
Yeah.
Well, those are just delightful little fellows. They're my grandsons, yeah. obviously, but they're 7 months old. But and then Luke is their older brother, and he's
2 and a half.
2 and a half. So anyway, a lot going on over there. And
so they're 7 months old, so it's a breeze now, right?
Oh, it's easy. Yeah, no problem. Says the one who doesn't really do much.
I do think you're trying to get them to bed at 5:30 is a little early, though. I really do.
5:30?
I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's a joke.
Yeah. If he would have said 7, I would have said, yeah. We'll put them to bed at 7.
They do start winding them down about 7 or 8. Fred.
Yes, sir.
How's everything at onenewsnow.com?
We are busy. We are busy all the time. President Trump keeps us busy, and then everything else going on in the courts keeps us busy. So,
and all those the many who attack,
yeah, there are a few of those.
President Trump on a daily basis,
yeah,
it keeps you busy. What's leading
sure
the news
does.
This morning?
Well, you may have heard yesterday the announcement from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that there was going to, and this is being widely misinterpreted. And even though Nancy Pelosi tried to clarify this yesterday, there's going to be a vote Thursday in the House. It is not an impeachment vote. In fact, a reporter asked Nancy Pelosi yesterday, can you talk to us about the impeachment resolution? So have a listen here. It's cut number two, Brent. Cut number two. Listen to what Nancy Pelosi responds to that question.
Speaker, can we have you talk about the impeachment resolution?
It's not an impeachment resolution.
And that, folks, is really, really important. It is not an impeachment resolution. Here's what the Democrats have decided to do in a desperate attempt to try to bring some credibility to this, if that's at all possible. What they're going to vote on Thursday is we're going to formalize, according to Pelosi, the procedures going forward on how we conduct the inquiry. All right? Now, here's how some Republicans are reading this. Jim Jordan, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, he says, you know what this is? This is a vote trying to put lipstick on a pig. That's a direct quote. Cut number one.
Yeah, because I think the reason she's going to have this vote is because the American people understand it is a sham. They understand it isn't fair. The idea that the president doesn't get counsel in the room, the people from the State Department don't get agency counsel in the room, the minority gets no rights. We can't even see the transcript unless we make a special appointment and some Democrats in the room as you're reviewing the transcript, and they get to selectively leak things because we follow the rules and they don't. This is all a ridiculous, unfair, and partisan process. But the American people see through it, so I think the speaker's going to try to dress it up a little bit, put a little lipstick on the pig, as they say, and have this vote on Thursday, but it's not going to change anything, and I think you're going to see every single Republican vote against it.
Oh, it's Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio responding to this non-impeachment vote.
Yeah, my understanding, and I'm not a constitutional scholar.
Like I am.
Like Tim is. This vote for the inquiry is not a step that is required by the Constitution or even House rules.
That's right.
This is simply a step being taken by Democratic leadership in the House, as Jim Jordan said, because they are feeling pressure. They're feeling pressure from the American people because all the things that Congressman Jim Jordan laid out are true. Republicans have no part to play in this, and they're being treated like pariahs. This is being done in total secrecy, mm-hmm. and it is starting to feel like a sham, mm-hmm. and Democrats are feeling the heat. That's why they're doing this.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, if I could bet, it's probably going to be a vote to officially open an impeachment inquiry. And you say, what's the difference?
This is a pre-inquiry? A prelude to an orchestra?
What they're doing now has no official name. It's not in writing. It's just they're just having meetings, basically. And they have the authority to block out Republicans and set their own rules because they're the majority. But what they're probably going to hold is an impeachment inquiry vote on the House floor where they can then say after that, the House officially has launched an inquiry.
But now my question is, and maybe I have not read and found an answer to this, so the Republicans' complaint has been, we can't subpoena witnesses.
That's right. We can't
even interview. We're not even inside the room, okay? So is any of that going to change? Because I'm sure this is going to be along partisan lines. I don't know if they're going to get all the votes, but let's say they do. Partisan lines, we now have an official impeachment inquiry. Does anything change? I mean, are the hearings, I think they're supposed to be nationally televised, but on television, are Republicans going to be in the room? Are they going to be able to question witnesses? Are they going to be able to subpoena their own witnesses?
No, I would be highly surprised if Nancy Pelosi gives Republicans the power to subpoena, because Paul Ryan wouldn't even give his own Republicans the power to subpoena. John Boehner did, but Paul Ryan did not as majority leader in the House. So I would be shocked if Pelosi gave Republicans the power to
subpoena. This is going to be, if Walker's appraisal is correct, this is going to be just Democrats mm-hmm. questioning, because part of the reason why they're doing this is because in secret they're holding these hearings, and the White House has been telling members of the executive branch, don't go.
That's right.
Don't participate. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats have said, well, fine, we'll go to court. Mm-hmm. And that's dragging this thing out. And the longer it drags out, mm-hmm. the worse it looks for Democrats.
Yeah.
So now they want to be on national television saying, well, the administration is not letting members of the executive branch come in to talk to us. That proves he's got something to hide. That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
If they do this.
Politically speaking, I think this is going to be a wash. I think the people who supported President Trump prior to this impeachment, the first stanza, Walker, is that what you called it? of the impeachment, Nancy Pelosi's impeachment song.
Right.
It's going to be divided between people who hate Trump and people who like Trump or love Trump. And that pretty well divides the country.
Right.
Probably 40-40 right there with probably 20% say, I like some of the stuff he does and don't like other stuff he does. But so I don't personally think this is going to help nor hurt. But we'll see. But I think they could vote right now. We all said this before. Yeah. There's this is a complete waste of time, money, energy, and effort. Because the Democrats were ready to. Many of the Democrats were ready to impeach a year ago, huh?
Well the day after the election.
Well, some like Maxine Waters were saying impeach before he was inaugurated.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And right. That. And so.
With no offense.
Right. So there's no. There's no. We're doing something that we all know how the vote would be anyway. So, you know why I go through this exercise? Now, there are the 10 Democrats that Walker cited before that are elected from districts that Trump won.
Yeah.
That are in the House of Representatives, that they may be what's holding back Nancy Pelosi.
I think those Democrats will.
They'll vote for the inquiry.
Yeah, Pelosi will probably be able to put enough pressure to get them to vote for the inquiry, but not an official impeachment.
Yeah. So, you know, we all know the Democrats. They hate President Trump and they want to see impeached. So they're just why they're going through this. To who are they trying to prove what to exactly?
Right.
To me,
I think they're trying to energize their base.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a politically driven act.
Yes,
right. Don't you think so? Chances of success are zero because it's not going to go through in the Senate.
Right.
But you're right. They may feel like this is how to fire up our base. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our guest now is Dr. Frank Turek. Frank joins us every Tuesday that he's available, and he joins us from the great state of North Carolina. Frank is the host of Cross Examined, heard on AFR Saturdays at 9 o'clock in the morning Central Time and Sundays at 4 in the afternoon Central Time. It's an excellent program. You want to make sure you tune in this Saturday, and Frank joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you know what the opposite of Congress is?
What?
Progress.
Duly noted.
Get it?
I got it. We got
all right.
It.
Good.
We like Congress. Progress. We're just not big on progressives.
That's right.
Huh?
That's
but,
right.
But anyway, yeah, progress. Hey, you been traveling?
Yes, sir. I was just came back from an 8-day trip. I actually spoke at the University of Alaska at Anchorage. And people can see that on our YouTube channel, the entire presentation we do. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist up there. I was told I was going to be protested by the LGBT community. They were in the room, apparently, but they never said anything during the Q&A, so I couldn't interact with them.
Well, now, you were in had you been to Alaska before?
Yes, I have. I've been up there at University of Alaska at Anchorage before. This is my second time up there. Great people up in Anchorage, and a beautiful place.
How many people live in Anchorage?
Anchorage, there's I want to say, people. Is about 300,000. There's only 700,000 in the whole state, so.
Oh, so half the population.
Almost half, yeah, lives in Anchorage, and the rest are rugged people. And the Anchorage people are rugged, too, but some people live out there without any electricity, without any, I mean, they're living in basically shacks out there and living off the land. It's pretty amazing.
So they're off the grid?
Yeah, but Anchorage is just like any other city. They got all of the same amenities most of us have. Yep.
Okay.
Do they have a Chick-fil-A?
That's the one thing they don't have, and that's why it's a godforsaken place. I asked them about that. I said, where's your Chick-fil-A? We don't have one yet. Are you kidding me? No God's chicken up here? How do you people survive?
All right. Hey, we talked about this topic a little bit yesterday here on this program, but we had this study come out. About millennials and socialism and communism, right?
Mm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. It's like 70% of millennials. These are people, I guess, in their late 20s, early 30s, say 70% of them would vote for a socialist. A socialist. Do they?
Yeah.
And I think the survey showed they don't really even understand what socialism is, do they?
That's the point, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
They don't even know what they're saying they're voting for, which is actually, in a strange way, encouraging. Because I'd rather have ignorance. Huh? I'd rather have ignorance on the part of millennials. In other words, they're supporting something they don't really know what it is. Than to say, yeah, I fully understand what communism, socialism is, and sign me up for that.
Yes. Huh? So, in other words, they want a big welfare state.
Yeah.
That's what they understand socialism to be.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, ignorance is a problem. I once asked a student at our seminary here, Southern Evangelical Seminary, I said, what's the greatest problem in America today? Is it ignorance or apathy? And this student said, I don't know and I don't care.
You are on fire today, man.
So 1 in 3 millennials see communism as favorable. Let's talk about this just for a moment. We'll just assume that this is true. It wouldn't surprise me, though, given the fact that almost all our campuses, colleges and universities are dominated by leftist professors. When I say dominate, probably 90% would probably be a low number. Probably more like 95% of all professors on colleges and universities, let's just say 90%, are vote Democrat and are lefties. Yeah. Is that right? Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of stuff you send your kid off to school, off to college and university. As I've said before, you better be prepared, and they better be prepared to face this, because it's going to come up in multiple studies, multiple classes. Right, Frank?
Yeah, you know what a better solution to the college is? I think sending kids to community colleges, getting them the 2-year degree while they're living at home, and then if they want to go to a 4-year school, they can, and they still get the same degree as somebody who's been there for 4 years. But you know, you get to watch them for 2 years while they're with you. And tell you the truth, I've been to many colleges, not just speaking, but I went to the University of Rochester. I went to George Washington University. I went to Rutgers. I went to several schools. And then I also went to a community college to take a course here or there. And the best students, the best teachers I've ever had were at community colleges. Why? Because they're there to teach. They're not there to do research. They're there to teach, and they're good teachers. So a community college solution is much better, I think, than a complete 4-year institution. Because, as I say, you get better teachers.
I don't want a 2-year doctor, though.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No, they got to go for the 4-year after that. I'm just saying that you can keep an eye on them when they're at your house. And it saves you a lot of money, too.
Yes.
They're getting the 2-year degree. So, But I think this was best summed up by the Babylon Bee. You guys are sure familiar with the Babylon Bee, the Christian satire site. Last year, they had this headline. They had a headline and a picture of thousands of people walking down a street like they're going somewhere. And the headline said, Caravan of Liberal Americans Makes Way Toward Socialist Paradise of Venezuela.
We love the Babylon Bee here.
It's empirically false that socialism works. Socialism will not bring prosperity. It will bring misery everywhere it's tried. And it's because it misunderstands human nature. We conservatives understand that people will work as little as they need and take as much as they can. Liberals assume people will work as much as they can and take as little as they need. And that's just misunderstanding of human nature. Human nature is bent toward evil. It's bent toward selfishness. It's bent toward laziness. And you need to give people incentives to work. Otherwise, if you give them the free rider problem that they can just kick back while other people work for them, many people will do that.
Frank,
and that's why it doesn't work.
Fred here. You know, Fred. There's a reason why I think Bernie Sanders is popular amongst this group of people. Is because Bernie says you should have free tuition, free medical care, all that sort of thing. But don't you think once these kids get out there and they start making a living and they find out, I'm being taxed at 50%. My income tax is 50%. I don't think this is fair. Maybe this socialism thing isn't for me. Is there some point where the light comes on?
Yeah, it's been said before that if you're not a liberal when you're 20, you don't have a heart. If you're not a conservative when you're 40, you don't have a brain.
Right. I've always said that.
You didn't say it when you were 20.
I've also heard it put this way. A conservative is a liberal who has a teenage daughter.
That's true as well. But think about it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was just going to say the point being here, and you're the point that Ed was making is that reality, Ed always says that reality is a cruel teacher. So when it's easier it's easy to be idealistic when you're living off your parents' money in college.
Right.
Right. Sure. And Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren says, you know, pay all your student debt loans, free health care for everybody, mm-hmm. free everything for everybody, and let the world come in. And if you're in college, you're one of these idealistic college kids, and this is all you're hearing, you're wanting to join hands and sing kumbaya with everybody
right.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to be 32 and you got three kids and, you know, your car breaks down and,
yeah.
you know, you're wondering.
And nobody's paying to fix it.
right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying reality is a task.
Brutal is a brutal teacher.
So anyway, maybe these kids will change. Maybe college kids have always been sort of on the liberal end, and maybe by the time they're a little older, they wise up to the ways of the world and see that socialism and communism do not work.
Well, it's pretty amazing. These very people that were surveyed, you know, they're in their 20s being surveyed on how they think socialism's a good idea, and they're responding to the survey on their $1,000 iPhones while wearing their $200 sneakers driving their BMW down the highway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
what's wrong with this picture?
Where do these things come from? They come from hard work. You got to work hard to make money to afford these things. And capitalism is the only way that you can alleviate poverty. You don't alleviate poverty by socialism. You alleviate poverty by creating wealth, and you do that through capitalism, not through socialism.
Exactly. Even though for these people that would be counterintuitive, these people who buy into socialism and communism, they think by taking from the, quote, wealthy and rich and giving, you know, playing Robin Hood, that's how you mm-hmm. even the playing field.
Yeah, they don't know how the rich became rich, though.
yeah.
That's the problem.
And what about when the rich are gone? Then,
yes.
then what do we do?
But
right.
this
yeah.
thought process succeeds from two areas. They guilt trip the wealthy, or they shame the wealthy and make it
shame
a
them.
Sin to be wealthy. And then everything's run on emotions. It's all about feelings. It's
right.
not about
mm-hmm.
whether the numbers add up or no, it's about feelings.
Right.
I want to see Oprah Winfrey and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and all these people. I want to see them interviewed on their whether they go for 90% taxes on their income, as wealthy as they are.
Well, they're mm-hmm. woke, so they're going to say, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,"
knowing that it will never happen.
Knowing that it's never going to happen,
right? Yeah. Because that's the reason they're not giving away 90% of their money.
Right? They could do that right now.
Right.
They could, to your
right,
point,
right.
they could give 90% away right
yeah.
now.
All right, listen, Frank, what's coming up this weekend on your show, man?
We're going to be talking about the moral, or I should say the major mistakes made when people try and attack the moral argument for God. We've actually had two programs on this already. We're going to have a third because I had a gentleman write me, and he tried to say that the moral argument doesn't work, and so I'm going through his objections, and it's a very relevant argument for God, because people can ignore the beginning of the universe. They can ignore the design of the universe. It's really hard to ignore morality because people deal with it every day. In fact, the people who are socialists think they have a moral cause for saying you ought to take money from the rich and give to the poor. That's a moral position. Well, why do you think that's right? Why do you think that's true? So,
all right,
we're going to be talking about that this weekend on the American Family Radio Network. Have you guys heard of this great network?
Yeah, indeed we have.
Yeah, they're okay.
All right.
Just okay. It's not good enough. Cross-Examined is the name of the show, Frank hosts at 9 o'clock Central Time Saturday morning. All right, Frank, take care.
Great being with you guys. See you.
Okay. We promise we will let Fred talk. When we get back from the...
I've got a cure for communism when we come back.
I'm sorry. Wait a second, Fred.
Cure.
We will let Fred talk when we come back.
Right. But not now, Fred.
Okay.
And we need to let Walker talk some.
Yes. All right. We will return momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III of the Hamilton Corner.
You can follow the Hamilton Corner at Hamilton Corner on Twitter, or you can also listen live on the AFR app. This is one of the most amazing features that are available to you. I always say you can put Hamilton in your corner, wherever that corner may be.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, on our tour of the Holy Land in March, one of the places we'll stop is called the House of Caiaphas. This is the place where Jesus experienced the mock trial in front of the Sanhedrin that you read about in the Bible before he was taken to Pilate. He was actually held there in that house. We go there. We visit there. We see where that was. And then right beside the house are steps that date back to the time of Christ. They're stone steps that date back to the time of Christ. Those were the very steps that Jesus walked from the Garden of Gethsemane as he was brought to this mock trial at the House of Caiaphas. That's just one of the places we'll visit in March on our Holy Land tour. For all the information on this March 12th through the 20th trip, go to twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. The Trump administration struck a massive blow against terrorism over the weekend, the president announcing the death of Abu al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIS, an evil monster who slaughtered countless civilians. The daring raid pulled off by U.S. Special Forces, an operation named in memory of Kayla Mueller, an American aid worker and ISIS prisoner. President Trump said al-Baghdadi died a coward's death. He died like a dog. And yet the Washington Post eulogized this murderous thug as some sort of revered theologian. They changed the headline on his obituary. They originally called him the Islamic State's terrorist in chief, but they later changed that to an austere religious scholar. The idea that someone at the Post felt obligated to eulogize a mass murderer is repulsive, but it really does illustrate the state of today's American media. And now you understand why President Trump canceled his subscription to The Washington Post. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
So one of the perks we have here at American Family Radio is, what we affectionately call Obama corn.
Yeah, because it's free.
It is free.
And it comes from the Obama phone. Remember when President Obama was elected?
Yeah.
He was people getting free cell phones.
Yeah, they were called Obama phones. Yeah. Well, we have free popcorn here, and so we call it Obama corn. Well, I go over to get my popcorn this morning here, walk by the machine, and it's not there.
Yes.
No, it's taken.
Yes.
And so I think it's Lawndale Presbyterian Church.
Yes. Why are you telling me Lawndale
Presbyterian? Let me just say this.
We're not mentioning names, right?
Well, I wouldn't dare do that. No, I think they gave that, they loaned that to us.
Yes.
Throughout the year.
Yes.
As an act
of. Now we're entitled to it.
That's what I'm saying. But then they come get it 2 days a year. I think once for Vacation Bible School and once for
their Reformation Day.
Reformation
which is
Day.
November 1st. They have a.
And so our popcorn machine is missing.
Yes.
And you're right. It does. We do have a sense of entitlement.
Now we feel bitter towards Lawndale.
Right. For taking the thing they loaned to us. Right.
For 360 days
so we
a
get
year.
Right. So I think on balance, we get a good deal out of that.
I think we do.
But I'm just saying that it still that doesn't help my feelings right at this moment.
Right.
Because I went for popcorn.
And it wasn't
It's not there.
There.
And I know who has it.
Yeah.
I know who has the machine.
And this is, you know, Frank Turek was just, he was talking about human nature. human nature says, I don't want to hear about little kids in China who don't have popcorn. I want my popcorn.
Now.
Right.
That's human nature.
That's in the Bible somewhere. There's a story about that. All right, Sandy Rios will join us momentarily, hopefully. We're waiting on Sandy. But in the meantime, Fred?
I got my cure for communism.
All right, what is it?
A few years ago, I was on a mission trip, went to Cuba. And if I had any sympathies towards communism and socialism, it ended the moment I got off the plane in Havana. Listen, folks, first of all, the taxiing into the terminal, it was bum, 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 because they can't afford to asphalt the thing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you move away from the terminal, you enter into a third world. And that's where people live there. They live in third world. And you just go a few miles out of Havana. We did the whole island, basically. Roads, horrible shape. There's poverty everywhere. You know what mass transportation is there? Benches in the back of dump trucks.
Are you serious?
That's the way a lot of people make it around from their jobs
just
to their houses.
Climb on the back of a truck?
It's the back of a truck. Back of a dump truck.
Wow. I didn't know that. I thought they might at least have buses.
They probably do in Havana, but we're talking about getting around in other places.
Yeah, wow.
One of the hotels we stayed in one night was near a hospital. The hospital looked like it had been bombed. No repairs done. I don't think you'd really want to go there for health care. So this is communism. This is socialism. This is the reality these people live in. What's so sad is that a lot of people wear uniforms there.
Yeah.
They work for the government. Now the government, you know, the uniforms are in shambles. You know, everybody has a little government job.
My understanding is that it's so poor in Cuba that when you stay at a hotel, even the bedbugs have fleas. Is that true? Is that true?
That was not my experience.
Where did you? How long have you been saving that one up?
I just came to me right now as he's talking about it. Absolutely, yeah. Okay. I can do that. I can
just
I
come off with right off the lame jokes like that right off the top of your head. Wow,
that's a lifetime amazing. Worth.
He'll
of
be
habit.
Here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Brian Fisher was with me. Now Brian Fisher did like one aspect of Cuba.
Yeah,
old cars.
Oh, he likes.
Okay. He is,
but it's
vintage.
Not done on purpose.
Yeah, it's strange to see these 50 vintage Chevys with diesel engines.
Wow!
Because that's they bring them in.
Why
from,
is that?
They bring them in from Russia.
Why don't they have any new cars?
They don't have.
Nobody who can
could
buy
afford.
Them.
Who could
nobody,
afford?
Nobody can buy them.
Of course not.
Well, it's the same thing in Venezuela. What's going on now?
Yeah.
If these people who say they're for socialism or communism. In America, could go and actually see what it is that they're talking about instead of the pipe dreams or the idealism of that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren project to people.
Yeah, it's all on paper. On paper, they go, look, if you tax everybody at this rate, then you bring in this much. But that's assuming everybody does their part and everybody's perfect, everybody's nice, everybody likes to share.
Yeah,
but that's not factoring in human nature.
Yeah, yeah, and also to punish people for success is immoral.
Yes.
Huh? Mm-hmm. And you start doing that on a massive scale.
Come on, Tim. Like President Obama said, you built a business.
You didn't build that.
You didn't build that.
Yeah. I know, but they can say those kinds of things, but if those policies were instituted that come from the worldview you just expressed, where you have 90% taxation on people, or more. Some have suggested more on and then you would see the economy come crashing down, basically.
Right.
Because capitalism, my dad used to say this when I was a kid and we would talk about these kinds of things. We didn't get into in-depth discussions, but he would always tell me, he would say capitalism undergirded by Christian principles has provided the most wealth in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the most change in the world and mm-hmm. the most
right.
Raise the standard of living.
Yep.
I didn't exactly how I said it, but that's basically yep. what he was mm-hmm. Saying to me. Capitalism or the free enterprise system undergirded mm-hmm. by biblical principles.
Right.
Does the best for the most. That's what
yeah.
he
said. And we've exported capitalism across right. the world.
Yeah, and Christianity.
In certain places. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Too, for a long right. time. We've sent missionaries around the world. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American, and we still do send missionaries around the world, but not doesn't seem like we do it at the level that we used to. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. By the way, capitalism is still preferred over communism, but if you lose the biblical underpinnings or the Christian principles, then it becomes just raw greed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that does damage too.
Yes.
In different ways.
Right.
So you're listening to Today's Issues. Joining us now is Sandy Rios. Sandy is host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on AFR from 7 to 8 Central Time. Each weekday morning, and she also serves as Director of Governmental Affairs for American Family Association. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim. How are you doing?
Hey, doing well. Hey, you.
I'm doing good, too.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear that, Ed.
She meant that for all of us.
Yes,
here,
I know.
I did. I didn't quite know who all was there, but now I know.
So we're all inclusive.
So easily offended, Ed. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, you've traveled the world, Sandy, and seen all kind of governments and economic systems and such. You've seen the results of communism and socialism. We were talking earlier how this study that showed 1 in 3 millennials say they see communism in a favorable light. What does socialism and communism ultimately do? Leads to totalitarianism too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Tim, I think the communists would tell you, I know they would, the Marxists would tell you that socialism is, that's how they catch people. And it's just it's just like one breath away from fully embracing communism. It's like marijuana to drugs, I guess. And so they are absolutely related. And yes, I have visited basically every communist country. I think almost every communist country in the globe except for Cuba. I was in Russia. I think the first experience I had with it was I was quite young when I moved to Berlin, Germany, and I was married, used to travel through Checkpoint Charlie, through that tank barrier with the guns pointed at the car to go into East Berlin, which, of course, was communist controlled. And I don't know if I've discussed this with you guys before, but I will never forget as long as I live. The feeling, once you left the freedom of West Berlin and you made your way into East Berlin, the feeling of oppression. First of all, when you traveled through the checkpoint, you'd had to hold up a card that said you could not roll your window down. And an East German policeman would come up to the window and look at your picture and look at you. And you had a limited amount of time you could stay across. And you had to drive, of course, your own car, then drive through the tank barriers, and then you get into East Berlin. And we were told that if we had any trouble, we would ask for a Russian officer. And so that's how it went, and that's how the day began. So then you go over, and it was absolutely colorless. There were no cars on the streets, just maybe every once in a blue moon, some Russian, little weird Russian-looking car would drive, because people had to work for like a year to even begin to afford a car. Most of them could never afford one. It was just party members sometimes. The people were so... You go to a restaurant to eat and they wouldn't even look at you. And they didn't talk even to each other. They looked down at their plates. Their forks would like clink on the dish. You could hear the clinking of forks. And sometimes you would see them like glance at you. And then if you looked at them, man, they were right back down in their plate. They
because of fear of the police state?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. And there were Russian officers and East German officers patrolling everywhere. You could cut the tension with a knife. My husband at the time was a runner, and he used to run for the Charlottenburg Sports Club in Berlin. And they attended, they went into the East to run a race against the East Germans. And during that match, no one clapped or cheered or made any sounds. That's the oppression I experienced. Right. And then when you come back through Checkpoint Charlie, back into the West, even though we, for the most part, were not in any danger, the relief at feeling that freedom, it's tangible. This is why people want to be free. It's something about God has placed in man's hearts, the desire to be free. You know what he says, if you free indeed. He wants us to be free. And
where the
right
Spirit
way.
Of the Lord is, there is liberty.
Yes. And so, and then of course, then later I was in Russia right before the Soviet Union broke up. I spent 3 weeks in Moscow interviewing all kinds of people. I could talk a lot about that. Again, they were just beginning to get information from the outside after 60 years of being the Iron Curtain, being ironclad. I mean, no information coming in from the West. And they were hearing things they'd never in their life heard. I heard almost every single person I interviewed. I interviewed a ballerina. I interviewed the head of the English language program for the KGB. I interviewed a neurologist named Clara Lebedinskaya, a professor from Moscow University. I could go on and on. Every single person I interviewed told me that their grandmother, Babushka, their grandmother had taught them about God. They volunteered that to me. I don't know why. And the neurologist was one of my most stunning interviews because we talked, because I had a disabled daughter, my ballerina interpreter had a disabled son. And so she and I really bonded because she'd never had anyone to really, there was a shame about that in Russia at the time. And she took me to the neurologist that was taking care of her son because she wanted me to be able to talk to her and interview her. And so this Dr. Lebedinskaya, who is a brilliant lady, was running this clinic for autistic children. And she was talking about the origins of autism and all of this. Tanya is interpreting for me, and I'm recording all of this. I'll never forget, she had sky blue eyes and a face like worn, like haggard, but you could tell she was once a beautiful woman. And at the end of all that she said to me about the scientific underpinnings and what they thought caused it, she said, "But we are beginning to think that maybe there is a God." I will never forget that. So I'm saying, what I'm trying to say is that they had been so indoctrinated and so brainwashed that they honestly were shocked by the news of God, the information about freedom of the press, all of that, just shocked. And then I was in Vietnam when it still is a communist country. I can't say too much about that. I could if I had more time. And I also was in North Korea on our first 9/11. I was in North Korea. And that is the most repressive regime on the globe when it comes to communism. It is so repressive that the thing that I found, not if you want to call this amusing, they were frozen in time. The women there were dressed like women of the 50s, because you might recall that the Korean War was in the 50s. And they had been so shut off from the outside world that they'd had no knowledge of fashions. You know the women of the 50s, like in the movies of the 40s, like with they have that the bangs in front that are a roll, and then they have like a big bun in the back around their neck. I don't know if you guys can picture that with the broad shoulders. That's the way the women, many of them, were dressed. Even the communist uniforms were like that. And so just completely shut off from any kind of outside information. And yes, I experienced it, and because of my time in Berlin as a young woman, and when I saw that oppression firsthand, I'd heard about it in school. I found out, by the way, that what I was being taught in school was actually true. I found out that the history we were told was actually true. I found out the communists repressed their people and harmed them. I saw that with my own eyes. I heard it out of their own lips. As my contrast today, when kids are brainwashed in public school and come out with a stupid statement that they support communism, it's because they don't know the truth. Mm-hmm. We were told the truth when I was in school, and I saw it with my own eyes.
Well, wow, fascinating. I know you've traveled the world. So you've never been to Cuba, huh?
Never been to Cuba.
You need to write a book.
Yeah, really. Wow, that's you have all these stories that need to be written down somewhere.
Thank you for saying that. I've thought about it. I do have a lot of. God has really placed me in some. And no, I'm from a very small town. There's nothing special about me. But for some reason, God has placed me in some incredible situations. Yeah. And I would like to record them. You know, sometime it would be great.
Small town Illinois girl, right?
Yes, sir.
Sound like a country
yes,
song.
I am.
Sound like a country song.
Are you from?
I've had people ask me before. You don't have to say specific. Where are you from, and where'd you grow up?
I don't mind saying. It doesn't seem to matter anymore. I'm from Carmi, and actually, people in Carmi, listen. They flew me back to speak at an event sponsored by their ministerial association last fall, and it was the most incredible experience. They are like so stirred up spiritually and also politically right now. I mean, in the right way. And they're beginning to make it. That's the county seat of my home county. And in their own small little town way, they are very well informed, and they're really rising to the occasion. So that was wonderful for me.
Carmi looks like it's about 30 minutes from Mount Vernon, maybe?
Something like that.
West Frankfort?
It's in the southeast corner of Illinois, and of course we have a lot of listeners down in that part of the country.
Absolutely.
But that's where I was raised. Yeah, town of about 6,000 people.
Sandy, thanks so much for being on with us, sharing those stories, and we look forward to talking to you next week. And have a good day.
All right, you guys too. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye.
It's Sandy Rios joining us. Fascinating life and career, Sandy.
It really is.
Sandy's had still going strong.
Yeah.
So God's not through. With Sandy yet, but man, really, those stories that she can recount, she didn't even talk about going to North Korea.
Yeah.
Was
she there? I think she mentioned it again when 9/11 happened.
Uh-huh. She was in North Korea.
Yeah.
But anyway, she hails from a town called Carmi, Illinois. Carmi, Illinois. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Walker, Ed, and Fred here. Fred, next story.
Yeah, just one quick ad.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd like to hear the response from these left-wing professors as to why is it so many people are clamoring to get into this country?
That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a lot of people trying to get out to a communist country.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's the reason?
You mean people aren't... All the immigrants from Central America
and all over the world.
Why aren't they going to Venezuela?
Yeah.
Right. Huh? Or Cuba.
Have caravans to Venezuela?
Yeah.
That's not happening, huh? Okay.
Right.
Why are tens of thousands of people every month trying to get over the wall into this country if it's so bad here?
Right.
One word.
Answer that question.
Opportunity.
Yes.
We have it and others don't.
That's right.
And I think Tim has made this point before. If they believe our country is so corrupt and such a bad place, why aren't they in favor of building a wall?
Yeah.
They ought to build a wall to keep those people out. You don't know what it's like here. Yeah. We're doing you a favor.
Yeah.
Don't come.
Right. All right. Why come to the land of bigots?
Yeah.
And, and xenophobes. All right, Fred, what do you got?
Well, there's an interesting survey, and we're getting a reaction to this today. The headline is, number of kids watching online videos soars. Now, they went out and they interviewed 1,677 young people. It was done by Common Sense Media, I think it was. These are kids watching primarily YouTube, by the way. 8 to 12-year-olds, 56% of 8 to 12-year-olds, they're watching almost 5 hours. They're spending almost 5 hours a day watching YouTube videos.
And where is this survey from?
Common Sense Media.
Okay.
Senior Director.
It's American Youth.
Yes.
No, but I mean, do you trust this study?
Yeah, I do because there's kind of anecdotal evidence by watching people today what they're doing. Now, for 13 to 18-year-olds, 69% of 13 to 8-year-olds watch online videos every day. Now, listen to this. The average... 7 hours and 22 minutes. Now, this does not include the time using these devices for homework, reading books, or listening to music, all right? This is straight, I just want to watch videos. Now, some of this is they're not watching TV like they used to when we were growing up.
You're watching TV in quotations on YouTube is what you're saying.
Yes. But, you know, when I was growing up, and I was just, my experience was, first of all, my mom and dad wouldn't let me sit in front of a TV for 7 hours a day.
No.
They kicked me outside. Go outside.
That's right.
Or I wanted to go outside.
Yeah. Right.
But what is it about life today that a 13 to 18-year-old wants to spend 7.5 hours looking at videos?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm stunned by that. I would think maybe half that, three to four hours a day, which is be bad enough, seems to me.
Yeah.
Of media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of internet media or what? YouTube for the most part. But man, you get over that, you're just talking couch potatoes.
My dad used to call it the idiot box television.
Mm-hmm. If you sit in front of it, too.
Yeah.
Unless it's educational.
Enough with the idiot box. Now, we all watch some TV. We would watch sports and stuff like that. And we growing up, we would watch, you know, All in the Family.
A few shows a week.
You know, Happy Days or something like that, especially on the weekends. But in the mornings, like on Saturday mornings, we'd get up. Usually my sisters and I were up first, and we would be eating our Frosted Flakes and watching cartoons. Mm-hmm. But my dad came down and we'd have, you know, real breakfast. My mom would cook. There was no going back and watching a bunch of cartoons.
No.
He kicked it. We were outside.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like we have too much time on our hands. The people who were surveyed here, because my kids don't have 7 hours.
Right.
To just sit and watch.
I don't know. Anyway, I do think if you look around at people today, if you're in a public place, if you were making note of this earlier, Fred, you're going to have 7 out of 10 people are going to have their necks down into their phones.
Yep.
Right.
And we all are guilty of a lot of us fall into that 7 or 10. Now, I don't have my phone. I don't have it bowed down for a long time for no reason. But still, sometimes we just need to put it away.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's what we do now is what used to be just dead time or just sitting there or thinking about something. We fill it up with
the phone,
with a little entertainment.
Well, this specifically talks about looking at videos. If you're looking at a video, you are not communicating.
Right.
It's one way.
It's dumbing down.
Mm-hmm. So you're not talking. You're not writing. None of that. You're just taking in stuff.
I wonder how much that'll affect, you know.
Communication skills.
Well, that and just critical thinking and you know, things that increase your brain power. I know that, the idiot box. And you can be you can have an idiot box sitting there if you're going to watch endless hours of YouTube something like that.
My dad called it the idiot box because he said it turns your brain to mush.
It's not good for you, you know. So
makes you an idiot.
Right.
I agree with all this
until it comes to college football season, in which I suspend my morals on this part.
For 4 hours and straight.
After college football season's over, I'll go back to being a Puritan.
Yes, that's right. And criticizing everyone else.
Yes, that's right, you sinners.
All right, we shall return momentarily with more of today's issues. Fred, thank you.
You're welcome.
Steve Jordahl on deck. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.